Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. They say that there's only three types of people in the world. Those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. I'm talking mothers of special needs and very young children, family members caring for elderly parents, spouses, siblings, or friends caring for disabilities such as Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer, stroke, heart disease, diabetes, multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy, AIDS, autoimmune diseases, and a host of others. I can go on and on. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani. Hey, from Los Angeles, a big LA, welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous Radio Star Worldwide Network. Yes, folks, I am the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we are going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Sounds nasty, doesn't it? It is. Hey, we have an exciting show planned for you today with my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg from the Caregiver Space. We will be interviewing Kay Toole and Eric Wren. So stay tuned. You will not want to miss this show. Now, if you're new to the show, we get many new listeners every week, especially since we've gone video. I am your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is caregivers of every single kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are, well, let's see, they're caring, they're selfless, they're sacrificial. Oh yeah, they have this tiny little bad habit. They're very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Folks, come on, learn a lesson from the airlines. You know, they tell us in the event of an emergency, put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your loved one with their mask. And the airlines know this so well because if you don't put your needs above your loved one's needs, you will most likely black out. And you won't be of any good to anybody with anything. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects it could have on us. It automatically throws us into this other thing called the grief process. Ouch. Unfortunately, folks, there is only one way out of the grief process, and that's to go through the grief process. You can't go around it, over it, under it. Sorry, got to go through it. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like you're stuck. And I just want to take this time now and thank my last week's guest, former model-turned-caregiver Linda Bice, sharing her amazing story. And just a reminder, you can listen to that interview and all of them, including this one, on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com. That's caregivers with an S, caregiver without an S.com. And while you're there, take our short quiz to see if you're a candidate for burnout. Just for doing that, I'm going to send you my first book absolutely free. What a deal. All right, enough of that. Guys, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for agreeing to this interview. I really appreciate it. Kay and Eric, why don't you take a minute or two and introduce yourselves. Just who is Kay Toole and Eric Wren?
Thank you for having us.
My pleasure.
Oh, Eric, I'll let you start.
Thanks for having us. So my name is Eric. I actually met Kay. Well, she has 10 daughters, and I have an identical twin, so we grew up together. And so Kay taught death and dying at Baylor, and I was a corporate communication major there at Baylor. And during my senior year, I thought, I should take this class, kind of interested in going into counseling. So I took Kay's class, and that completely changed my perspective on what I wanted to do with my life. So Kay's death and dying class, she brought real people in with stories of how they've experienced grief. So she actually brought my grandmother, who lost her husband, my grandpa, to Alzheimer's for 11 wow. years. So being able to hear his story of decline through her perspective as a caregiver was powerful. in an academic setting that Kay was able to facilitate. She also brought in several other people who had experienced death or were currently dying. And through that, I got an entirely different perspective of grief. And I think that that is very valuable to get at the age of 25. So all that to say, Kay has been a very influential person in shaping what I'm interested in doing for the rest of my life, and having that be something that plays a part in whatever role I go into, whether that's business or counseling or a variety of other things. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit about myself. Graduated from Baylor, and Kay and I are currently working on a project together called the DieWell Project. And simply put, we really just want to open up the conversation on end of life, grief, caregiving, and get real people's stories and have them be able to share and have people be more comfortable with that topic. So I'll let Kay take it from there.
Okay, it takes a little bit longer to give my background since I'm over twice his age, but I'll try to summarize it. I got my master's in counseling and did family practice counseling. I had my own practice in Alabama. Then I had four children and had two foster babies and about 25 kids over the years that lived at our house. So that was a good foundation to actually learn caregiving when you take care of so many kids. And while my children were little, I counseled through our church just on a volunteer basis and became an ordained minister through my church. Wow. And during this time, my father had a massive stroke. He was a totally vibrant man who was on the city council and did continuing ed classes and very intelligent. And he had this stroke where it left him with aphasia. He was a bit crippled at first. That kind of helped resolve through therapy, but his aphasia never went away. And he had the Broca's and Wernicke's aphasia, so it was very severe, and his communication was extremely limited. So for a few years, I was his caregiver. We did the 3 times a week speech classes, 2 times a week physical therapy classes, occupational therapy, doctor's visits, all of that stuff. So after my youngest children were in high school, I went back and did training and became a chaplain at a hospital. And that really opened my eyes to how caregivers, medical professionals are not equipped to deal with traumatic diagnosis. Like, they are good at dealing with things that can be cured, but if something can't be cured, then they're almost at a loss as to how to support a family and a patient as they go through that. So as I worked as a chaplain, Baylor approached me and wanted me to come and teach death and dying to pre-med students, mainly medical professionals. So I started teaching there, and as I was doing both jobs, my mother fell and had a traumatic brain injury, had 2 brain surgeries and a stroke as a result of one of the surgeries. So wow. I quit the chaplain job and then just taught and was a full-time 24/7 caregiver for my mom and taught. And I can tell you that my life experiences, the education I've received has been good. But the most valuable education I've received has been from actually being the caregiver and being the one that goes to the doctor's visits with the patients and being the advocate. Pardon?
Hands on.
Yes, hands on. So when I was teaching the students, it alarmed me to see that, and Eric's an exception, but a lot of them really didn't even know how to interact interpersonally with other people, because there's such a generation of having iPhones and computers and Facebook and all these social media things that when it comes to dealing with a person one-on-one, they are not very skilled at it. So when we would talk about patients and talk about diagnosis, they really had no concept, no clue, no empathy, no understanding of how to deal with this person. So I brought some of my patients in. I brought some friends in that were suffering illnesses. I have a really close friend who is a 32-year-old male who's dying, in the process of dying, and he graciously came and spoke to the class. And what I saw is that I could teach for years, and it would just go over their head. But when these real life people came into the classroom and shared their story and shared their feelings, their emotions, and shared how it changed from here is what my life looked like, but then this trauma happened, and now here's what it looks like. This is my new normal. There was a paradigm shift in the students, and it was like the light bulb went on, and it was like, oh, I got it. Oh, I understand. And it was so powerful. I can't explain. You know, we learn so much through other people's stories. And that's what was happening, is they were getting it from the stories they heard. And so I thought, you know, there's some of these people who are dying, and I'm going to lose their stories. I won't have them for the next semester. I've got to get them on film. So I know nothing about filming, nothing about any of that process. I'm not technical. That's why I have Eric. And
how did you two meet?
Well, my kids were friends with his. I was actually friends with his mother when we were young.
And, wait a minute, he has kids the age of your kids?
No, my kids are friends with him.
Ah, okay.
So, she has twin daughters.
He's just a kid himself then.
Yeah, he's like one of my kids.
You have twin daughters?
Yes.
Oh, so you are old enough to have children. He looks like a baby, like he's like 13, just getting his facial hair.
That's right. I'm new to all the facial hair.
You'll thank me one day for that compliment. Maybe not today.
Okay, so well, now Debbie can say that about me, too.
Yes, you look very, very young. It's hard to imagine you have kids out of high school.
Yes, and grandchildren. So I realized that I needed to get the stories on film, and I gathered a group of unknowing but willing volunteers, and we started filming some of these stories. And the stories then were noticed by CBS and by a project at New York University called the Empathy Project. And they encouraged me to continue getting stories on film. They said that they were so impactful.
Yeah.
And that medical schools are now realizing that there's a component that's been missing all these years, which has been the interpersonal skills and empathy component.
Yeah, empathy.
Isn't that amazing? So now the schools are starting to shift and realize we need to teach this. But how do you teach it? Well, you teach it through people's stories, one of the most powerful ways. So Eric and I saw this as a big need, a gap that we wanted to fill. So we've started what we call the Die Well Project, filming people's stories and getting the powerful stories into the correct places. We're trying to get them into medical schools. So we are part of the Dallas Foundation, which is nonprofit, and we're trying to raise money now to make more films. We have the stories in the pipeline. We just need to have the fundraising to make the films to pay for the crews. So the stories I did are on YouTube, and they were done by volunteers. They're not, you know,
really
Hollywood professional level.
So what's your YouTube channel?
Well, if you Google A Conversation on Grief, and then I've got three. There's one is A Conversation on Grief, Dean Johnson, D-E-A-N-E, and then Johnson. And this is the story about Eric's grandmother who walks through Alzheimer's with her husband and watches the whole process.
Uh-huh. Do you have all the stories on one, like, YouTube channel where you can access all of them?
No, we don't, but the stories we make from now on, we're going to have on available on a different site.
Okay. So right now they're individually... And how many do you have?
I have three that are uploaded to YouTube. There's one called a Story on Grief, A Conversation on Grief, Stevie Michaels. And it's her story. She's a young lady that has lost her baby at birth, her daughter. And one of the things she talks about that was so devastating to her is that here she was pregnant for 9 months, excited about her baby, didn't know until that day that she wasn't going to have a baby, And instead of taking home her child, she had to plan her child's funeral. And then afterwards, the aftermath was no one asked her about her baby. Her daughter's name is Aria. No one asked her about Aria. She'd had a baby. She wanted them to ask her. And people just felt so awkward. They didn't know what to say, were afraid they'd say the wrong thing. So they just didn't ask her at all. And that's what we see in caregiving for, like, my father, who can't speak and comes across jarbled. People feel so awkward that they back away from us.
Yeah.
And it's a horrible thing. When we're in that place where we really need each other, people back away from us. And so that's one of the things we're trying to prevent by educating the public, that that's not the compassionate thing to do, that we need to change. We need to make some different choices in that.
I see you so nodding, Adrian. Do you know who that person is? You heard this story?
No, I just know that people turn away when they should come at you with open arms. They don't want to be reminded of their own mortality. It's uncomfortable. You know, they're not thinking about you.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. You know, my wife also had aphasia. She's had her stroke 20 years ago. And, you know, I just watched all the friends, and she had a ton of friends, more than me, just dwindle and dwindle and dwindle, and, you know, mainly because people feel uncomfortable. And at my church, I remember there was a guy who had a stroke and had aphasia also, and I remember how I felt uncomfortable and how even I, you know, pulled back because, you know, I just don't know what to say. There's only so much you can say, there's only so much he can say, and now what do we do? You know, just very uncomfortable. And I think what you're doing is great. How did CBS find out about it?
They found them on YouTube. They called me and said, "These are the best things we've seen. We need to talk to you." And I'm just like, "Be the right person."
Why were they on YouTube, and what were they looking for? What keywords did you use?
They were looking for videos to show medical students to use to teach empathy.
Wow.
Just in the right place at the right time. That is miraculous.
It's God. Yeah.
There's people who would kill to have CBS stumble across their videos on YouTube.
Yes. Yes.
At NYU, are you working with filmmakers or medical students?
Well, we aren't working with NYU. We're friends with the ones that are doing the empathy project at NYU, but that is for medical students. But, you know, interestingly enough, it's not just the medical profession. It's the general public,
absolutely,
as you've seen. And what I found in the hospital was it's also clergy, who you would think would be the most compassionate, the most equipped to deal with that kind of thing. I remember one night when I worked in the hospital, and this patient had a death of twins. They were born, and they both died. So I talked with her. We talked about her babies and what she was going to name them, and that they had fingers like her fingers. And, you know, we called in her family to come sit and rock the babies and dress the babies. We took pictures of them. And then she said she wanted to have a baby dedication service for her children before they were taken to the morgue. So I called their pastor and I said, you know, can you come up and do this? He said, sure. So we meet in the hallway, and he's a man in his early 30s. And I said, okay, here's what's happened, and here's what I need you to do. And he just looked freaked out, and he said, I never even seen a dead baby. I can't do this. Wow. And I said, they know you, and they don't know me. You have to do this. And he said, I can't do it. I can't do it. So I said, okay, here's the deal. Because I'm older, I can be bossy. And I said, you're going to come into this room with me, and I'm going to do the service, but when I say pray, you pray. When I say read this scripture, you're going to read that scripture. And you're going to learn from me how to do this, because it's going to happen again. And so we did, and we went through that process. And afterwards, a few hours later, we're walking out, and he said, thank you so much. I've just never been taught what to do in that situation. And I think that's the impetus behind it, is we all want to help. We all want to be compassionate, but we don't know what that looks like when someone dies, or when someone has an illness, or when someone is different. And so that's a point of our project, is to bring it more exposure so people do know and they don't feel so awkward.
So how did you come up with the Dyewell Project, the name, and whose idea was it?
Well, we think that in order to die well, you have to live well. And so...
Well, and to add on to that, what I learned from Kay in her class is that so many people are uncomfortable with the word death or die. So they would say if she was sharing a story about grief or someone who's lost something, they would say passed away or went to be with the Lord, which are fine, but they're softer phrases. So if our goal is to open up a conversation on grief and death, we wanted to use the word die in there. I think it's important that people start to get more comfortable talking about that. And so the ones who are in grief don't feel so isolated.
Is that why you use it as one word instead of two? I didn't realize that it said die well. I thought that was somebody's name.
Yeah, we just combined it into one. You know, I don't actually don't know why we put it into one word.
Sounded good.
Have you ever heard of the death cafes that are all across the country?
I've heard about those.
Yeah, it started from women who have lost children, and so they meet together in like a coffee shop. They'll start it's like a franchise. And there's hundreds of them, maybe even thousands of them across the nation. And they just go, and it's like a grief support group. And, you know, they drink their beverages and stuff, and it's very popular.
And they've found a group of people that will talk and that will understand.
Yeah. So who are some people?
And share.
Say again?
And share.
And share. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And share. Who are some people who impacted your journey to, you know, doing this? Did you already mention some of them?
Well, I'll answer this one first. So my grandma, I think that she's one of my best friends. We think she's one of the funniest people I've ever met. So whenever I went off to Baylor, she's in Waco, so I spent a lot of time with her. And that's whenever the Alzheimer's with her husband and my grandpa were just in the depths of it. He couldn't remember, you know, her name. He would go through something called sundowning, which is usually, for those who don't know, once the sun goes down, he would have hallucinations and see things and talk to himself, and it usually gets worse at night. So we would hear her stories, we'd go over there and help her as often as we could. And so I would say that she has been the most influential person, along with my mom, because if it makes sense, my grandma, we call her Gaga. Gaga was the main caregiver, and then my mom was basically Gaga's caregiver. So I saw the burnout from both of them, from the caregiver and the caregiver to the caregiver. So watching that, I think that that is by far the most foundational part of my interest in this.
So you anticipate the Dyewell Project helping caregivers versus helping those who are not caregivers, who are just friends or associates of the, or both?
Everyone, yeah.
Yeah, and how will it help caregivers avoid burnout, which most of them are?
Mm-hmm.
What aspects of learning about empathy and what have you will make a caregiver who's overwhelmed, you know, with all these responsibilities, and they, you know, they're not eating right, they're not resting right, they're not handling things correctly, they're more negative than positive. How will the Dyewell Project get them to be more into the self-care, you know?
Well, we're hoping that by educating other people, for one thing, that it's going to provide equipping for those people to come into the caregiver's life and help provide more support for them and more understanding. So it will lessen the burden by having other people, more people in their life, feeling comfortable with the situation. Also, if we educate the medical professionals, I've found with my father especially, who, because he can't speak, it's very frustrating for me to take him to the doctor and have them address me as he's sitting right there next to me. Those kind of things that would make my life a little bit easier if I knew that the medical professionals got it, and if they wanted to understand it, wanted to listen, wanted to be in our world instead of just want to give me a quick diagnosis and leave. So that would lessen my stress if I could feel like they really understood, they were providing good care, compassionate care, and I had support of other people.
Yeah, I see that. If we could somehow get the caregiver's family to hear this stuff, then the family then in turn would say, oh, well, maybe there's more I can do than I thought. You know, like your exactly. example of the pastor who yeah. didn't think he could do a funeral. And
I mean,
so,
I would,
go ahead.
I would also hope that in educating a caregiver about this, that they would be able to direct the dialogue until everybody else learned, you know, caught on and learned from the good work that you're doing. And it really does sound like it's very much needed. And a lot of doctors will not take the time, and you're so blessed when you find one mm-hmm. who gets it and will work with you that way.
Let me tell you a story that impacted me when I was a chaplain, and it's just that showing that we're not equipping the medical professionals well. We had a patient that came into the ER and he ended up dying. He'd had an injury at work. His whole family was gathered in a room. I'd gotten them together and I went and got the physician. He came in and he basically said, I'm so sorry about your father. We did this, this, and this. We tried this, and this didn't work, and he's died, and I'm just so sorry. And he got up and walked out, and they were just stunned, just sitting there stunned. And I said, I'll be right back. And I went out and ran down the hall and caught him, and I said, that's not okay. You need to come back in here and spend at least 5 minutes sitting with him to show value to this man's life.
And good for you.
There's called a ministry of presence, and you need to validate this family by being in there. And I said, I'll ask them if they have questions. They probably won't. They're in shock. But you're going to sit in there until I tell you it's okay to go.
And I like you. She doesn't look very pushy, does she? Just from first appearances. That's and you do it so nicely, you know. You don't raise your voice and it's like, I bet they just don't know how to respond to you.
they obey without asking any questions. Having so many children, I'm good at it.
Yeah, but subtle form of manipulation.
That's right. So he came back in the room. I told him the doctor's here. You know, if you have any questions, you can ask him. If you don't, that's okay too. We're just going to sit with you and if he needs to leave, I'll write down questions and I'll find him later. But we're just going to sit with you. And we sat for about 5 minutes. And then I said, the doctor has to leave to go to other patients, but he's still available if we need to ask him questions. And he's going to go ahead and leave now. So he got up and left. And then I finished up with the family. But later in the hallway, I saw this doctor and he grabbed me and he said, thank you so much. I'd never known to do that. I always felt like I was in the way. I always felt like, you know, I should hurry and get out of there as fast as I could.
Need some instructions, yeah.
Yeah. And he said, I can process the losses better if I can do things like that. I wish someone had told me. So that's part of our vision, just helping them be better caregivers for us as the caregivers and our patients. But I also know one of the key things, like you were saying, is that we need to speak up. We need to say what we need and what we don't need. So one of my goals with my own children, and I have six now that I'm writing to, I'm writing everything that I do with my parents, not everything, but all the things that we go through and the hard times and the good times and the difficulties and the things that grieve me. Because when my grandparents were the age where they needed to be cared for, I never heard a word. No one talked about it. I don't remember what my parents did to take care of my grandparents. You know, and so I want to equip my children better for when that season comes for me and for others. Mm. And it just is kind to them to go ahead and tell them now what's going on. And there's little things that we experience every day that grieve us, but how are they to know and how are they to help us or support us unless we tell them about it? So that's another word we want to get out, is we need to share with friends and family what's going on, or they don't really have a chance to be supportive of us.
Absolutely. Well, listen, we've come upon our break time, so we're going to take 3 minutes for a break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, is about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resemble that of both a Martha Stewart and a Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech-impaired and paralyzed on the right side. Who am I? My name is David. I've had the privilege of being Charlene's husband since 1975. We had a wonderful, fairy tale, storybook-like courtship that culminated in our marriage a year later. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where, after 10 years, she received two black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left. Finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn, she started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought us all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, our love then produced Rebecca Elizabeth. We had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope, that everything happens for a reason, and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone who meets her. Her accomplishments since her stroke are very impressive, often making us normal people look like whiners and complainers. So pick up your copy of One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today. You won't be disappointed. Just hear what best-selling author Lynn Barrington has to say about it. If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel Christian music, Andre Crouch? Charlene just won't let the promises of God go, and she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. You'll be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through. Available everywhere, but if you purchase your copy directly from the author's website, onearmoneleg100words.com, Charlene and David will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy.
Okay, welcome back. We're here with Kay. Pronounce your last name again, Kay. I'm sorry.
Tool.
Just like a toolkit. Mm-hmm. And Eric Wren from the Die Well Project. And of course, we have our lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg, with us as well. So, wow, what an amazing thing that you're doing. And what have you found to have been some keys to helping yourself and the professionals that you've worked with in dealing with the stress of caregiving?
Well, I'm sure you've heard this before, but the key is to look at it holistically. Mm-hmm. You know, first of all, as a counselor, what I would do when someone came to my office and was a caregiver and was stressed out and having difficulties, I'd find out, are you sleeping well? How much are you sleeping? Are you eating well? Are you eating healthy? How much are you eating? You know, are you exercising? Are you going outside? Are you spending time with friends? You know, what does your lifestyle look like? Because those are important.
Have you ever met a caregiver who wasn't burned out? Just curious.
No.
Right. Like, they're all burned out to some degree.
Yeah, it comes and goes.
And you've been getting some good responses from the people you're in touch with, yes?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one of the keys, Dave, and I think that you recognize this, is using your faith as a grid in your life to handle being a caregiver to handle this. If your faith isn't helping you in your life, then you need to reevaluate what your faith is.
Yeah.
So one of the things about faith for us, and I taught this in my class because I think it's so important, in order to take care of someone else, you need to be healthy. You need to take care of yourself.
That's right.
And so I taught about self-talk, which I'm sure you've heard about a lot. But, you know, what are you telling yourself? What are the things that are going through your mind? And that can contribute to burnout.
Yeah.
So we need to recognize what that self-talk is and then decide to stop it. And decide what we need to change it to. And so we may be overwhelmed with the moment in caregiving and not be able to see beyond it. So we've got to be in the habit of having this positive self-talk. And as a Christian, I have scripture that is my self-talk. So I can say, okay, you are valuable, you are loved, you are worthy, you are a daughter of the King. Nothing is too difficult for you. You know, and I have great scriptures that I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. When I'm in those hard places, when I don't see hope,
yeah,
I can find hope through that kind of thing. So really getting equipped even before you hit the burnout phase is very critical and vital.
Yeah, I always tell people, you know, don't wait till your phone is flashing red, 1% to go. I mean, that's danger. Danger, Will Robinson. You know, wait until your batteries, you know, aren't totally wiped out before you think about, okay, maybe I should take a nap. Okay, maybe I should, you know, ask for help, etc. But anything you want to say, Adrian?
Well, I mean, we're talking about having faith, and this has to work for people who are also agnostic or atheists. I mean, having faith comes from a different place then, but it's not as though everybody's going to turn to scripture necessarily. There are lots of other things. And you can do self-talk to say, I'm worthy, and people need to know that that's there for them anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all about a positive attitude. I mean, attitude is everything. If you don't have the right attitude, the positive attitude, you know, either tomorrow is going to be a disaster or tomorrow is going to be a new day. You know, the sun will come up tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Well, and
hope is so important. You know, without hope, people are hopeless.
Adrian, there's a great YouTube called Jessica's Daily Affirmations, and it's this little girl. Have you seen it?
No.
It's a little girl who's standing in the bathroom mirror. And it's, you know, kids, their self-talk is outside themselves. They say it. It's not hidden. And so she's in front of the mirror saying, I have beautiful hair. I have a great house. I have great pajamas. I have a great mother. I am great. I am good. I can do anything better than you. And then she jumps off the counter and runs off.
And how do you find that? Jessica is her name?
Jessica's
Daily Affirmations.
Jessica's Daily Affirmations. That's really fun.
Yeah. So some other things that we've learned is it's key to utilize humor.
Humor is so important.
Yes. You have to be able to laugh. Mom and I just had, she had an accident in a restroom, and it was a total mess, and we were trying to clean it up and trying to get out of there. And
Public restroom?
Yes. And she said, I was just about to tell them how clean their bathroom was. And we just started laughing and couldn't stop. You know, my mom has the greatest sense of humor. So humor plays a role in it. And there's things you can do. If you don't have someone in your life you can laugh with, you know, Google comedians online and watch funny movies and watch funny shows and really do watch what you're watching on, what you're taking in, because it can affect you. So if you're a caregiver, you may not want to watch a lot of depressing movies, you know.
Yeah, I had a caregiver comedian on one time, and he did this whole thing on, you know, you're a caregiver when, And, you know, he'd give you like 25 different funny things, which I can't think of not one right now, but that's because of my age, you know.
Well, another tip is some people like to journal, and that's just a way to get out their feelings, and it's therapeutic to some people. I did that. I really liked doing that. It was real helpful. So that's a key. And another is to give to others. And I know as a caregiver, you think, oh my gosh, how could I give to anybody else? But you can do fun things that are totally different than your caregiving, such as, you know, the Operation Christmas Child, where they make Christmas box shoe boxes for children, and you put stuff in it and then give it to the kids. Something like that. Find something where you're giving to somebody else, because that's a very health giving activity. And then like his grandmother, what she did was write books that told about her story so she could help someone else, and that was real therapeutic to her. My friend who lost her baby ended up making sock babies for free out of rice bags and would mail them to other mothers who lost their baby, and the sock baby would weigh the same amount as the baby that they had lost. So she ended up giving, and that helped her heal. Another key is to keep a thankful list. And these, sometimes it's hard to come up with what you're thankful for. And you may, it may just be even as little as, thank you for the sun I saw when I walked to the mailbox, you know. But keep a list and write it down, because you're going to need that. And it helps you realign your focus to something more positive. Ann Voskamp wrote a wonderful book called 1,000 Gifts. And she encourages you to write a list every day, and by the end of a year you've gotten in such a habit of seeing the good in each day that it changes your perspective.
Who is that author?
Ann Voskamp, V-O-S-K-A-M-P.
Thank you. I find journaling to be incredibly helpful, and encourage people on my site to do it. I have a column that I do called The Page Listens, which is a video where I just talk about journaling and come up with topics for people to write about. If they can't come up with something on their own, just give them some things that they might be able to do with the people that they're caring for, just a new way of communicating during a very hard time.
Yeah, Adrian has an amazing platform and a Facebook page and a website. I think she's got 165,000 or close to it followers. But explain to them what someone can find when they come to your sites, Adrian.
Well, we have, it's called the Caregiver Space, and there are forums where people can share by topic, or they can just introduce themselves, start a topic if they don't find something that they're interested in that they want to talk about. We have about 3,000 right now, about 3,000 really, really good articles that have been archived. We're starting something called the Buddy Project, where we will pair two caregivers up. We've got about 150 people that have signed up for it already in the past week. It's really taking off. And this will make two people come together who don't know each other but will have things in common, and they need not feel that they're burdening the other person because they're both going through the same thing. So we're going to try and pair people that way. But those are the kind of things that we're doing on the site. And we have Faces of Care, which just shows that everybody, you know, everybody's a potential caregiver. I mean, as Dave has in his introduction. it's free. It's an easy place to be. We have a lot of good professional authors, and then we have people who are writing their stories. But the fact that you're listening stories from people and finding them willing to talk is really encouraging. I really, really like that.
Yeah, you go to their homes and record?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Wow. So what kind of a crew do you need to take over there?
Well,
yeah. Obviously, Eric is part of the crew.
Yes.
He's got a big video camera on his shoulder. Or is he using his cell phone?
Yeah, no, we actually have we've partnered with a film company in Dallas called M3 Films, and they've been so great about gathering information from us. Making Movies with a Mission. Mm. And so they started something called Filmanthropy, and it's a fund through the Dallas Foundation. And so donors will give financial gifts so that people can produce these videos that do have a mission. So we were a great fit for it, and they're great to partner with. And the pipeline right now, I think we have about 6 stories. Is that right, Kay? Mm-hmm. Of ones that we're going to be sharing. So we'll be going into their homes, and it's a variety. So we have a story on someone who lost their child to cancer, and then a story on suicide, and then a couple of ones on traumatic deaths, and then one on Alzheimer's and more of the long-term caregiving.
Mm. Hopefully we'll do one on my dad too, because I think to see, you know, Dave, you know, to see on video someone struggling to talk,
right,
and you don't understand it till you see it. I would take dad to class and I would show pictures of his life from birth on, and how he was a father and a grandfather and an engineer, and he had a full life. And so then he would stand up to talk, and the students would be ready for him to say something eloquent. And then the aphasia would start taking effect. And I could usually know, like you do, what he's saying. And I'd say, well, my dad's saying this. And once they saw how difficult it was for dad to communicate, yet they saw first him as a whole person, it was revealing about how we judge people right away by the first impression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so how long is each testimony film?
Well, since they're not done yet, there's not an exact time. I think that it'll probably end up being about 5 to 7 minutes per story, because we want it to be something that can be shared on a social media platform.
So
something like that.
Yeah.
But we know that the stories we have are going to hook people really quick, just because they're powerful and they let you in onto just the raw emotion of it all. And
yeah, I also did that when my wife first had a stroke. You know, I was watching Little People, Big World, that reality show about the small people or the little people.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what, this is interesting, just watching them do basically nothing. They're just living their day to day, minute by minute. But it's so interesting. And then I thought, you know, my life is every bit as interesting as them. I should, you know, do a film. So I got my camera out, you know, from my high school days when I used to do that. And I did a film about my wife, and everybody loves it. Then I had a friend who was equally as amazing story. He used to be an Olympic swimmer. And he also had a stroke, had aphasia. And so I did a film on him. So now I've got 2 films. They're already done.
Yeah.
And produced.
So is the one for Charlene, is that the one on your website?
I think it is.
Okay. I saw that.
There's one film that has the book promotion, promoting the book, and there's some of that video in there. But then you have to look at the other one. I think it's 3 minutes. That's the one where I'm just, you know, talking about her and convincing the world how amazing she is and how she makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers, because she lost her right side. She has one arm, one leg, and you know, she probably knows about 100 words, but not really. They're in there because we pulled them out, but probably she has use of a dozen words on command. So you know, she's like a one-arm wallpaper hanger, and she's a gourmet cook. She does her own shopping, she cooks her own meals, she keeps the house clean, she takes care of me. And she's an amazing gourmet cook. That's why people just look at her and say, what am I complaining about? You know, look at this woman. And she encourages everyone she meets. I mean, they're touched, and they're never the same when they meet her.
You know, Dave, my dad now lives at an assisted living. My mom was with me. And Dad can't talk, but he'll go around and do this to everyone. And everyone loves him and said he's so encouraging. He says no words, you know.
Right. Well, you know, 75 to 80% of communication is nonverbal. And she's got it down. I saw her speaking to someone in a restaurant while we were waiting for a table. They were talking for 20 minutes, and they're laughing, they're slapping each other on the back, and he doesn't know that she can't talk. But she's got, you know, the gestures and the sounds, you know, and pointing and touching, you know, and what can I say?
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So how can people find out more about the Die Well Project? How do they contact you? And what is, before you answer that one, what's the future that CBS, when they get back to you, what do they have planned, or did they even tell you? Because they told you to keep doing it. I assume they're going to come back at some future date and maybe do some project with you, or what? You know?
We really have no idea as far as that's concerned. We just felt we were called to get this word out. And so we've pursued being considered a nonprofit and getting the films out there. We may end up partnering with medical schools or hospitals in the future. But what we want to do now is get the stories on film and get them out there.
Cool.
So the more we talk about caregiving, illness, grief, and even death, the less awkward it's going to be to talk about it, and the more people will understand it. And with this greater understanding, compassion, we can all be more supportive and empathetic and have a better environment for our caregivers and for our loved ones. And, you know, this has just gone on too long where we haven't educated ourselves or the public about what to do. Everyone dies. Everyone goes through illnesses. Like you say, everyone is a caregiver in some way, and yet we have not talked about it in the past. So we're trying to use our project to bring that more into normal discussions.
Yeah, because a lot of people do not have life insurance because they don't want to think about it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And because it's really death insurance. but then nobody would really talk about it.
Yeah, and isn't it unusual? I just would tell my class that, you know, everyone dies, yet we don't talk about it. Yet we have baby showers for the beginning of life, but we don't have, you know, we don't recognize really the end of life. And when it's okay, it's not to be feared.
Yeah. So again, your website, how can they get a hold of you?
We're building our website right now. It's at www.thediewellproject.com.
The, T-H-E?
Right.
D-I-E-W-E-L-L project.com.
Right. And then, so you can also look us up at the Dallas Foundation. We're under the Filmanthropy. It's like philanthropy, but it's with F-I-L-M, Filmanthropy. Mm. That's where people that we're talking to are going to be able to help help these people share their stories through donations. And then as far as we want to know more stories. We love talking with people and you know, finding out stories of death and grief that go on, but on top of that, resilience and how caregivers truly are resilient
sure.
people. So our email address is thediewellproject@gmail.com.
Great.
So same thing.
Yeah. I just lost my mother last year, last September, a year ago, to dementia. So, you know, I'm very...
Yeah.
I was the sandwich generation to take care of my wife and take care of my mother. So, yeah, anything you need from me to help, let me know. And Adrian has her own stories of death and grieving her husband. Tell briefly what your story is, Adrian.
Well, briefly, my husband was diagnosed with lung cancer in 2005, and we knew that it would go away for a while after surgery, but that it was definitely going to come back and ultimately be fatal. 2 years after he was diagnosed, his mother at 89 was diagnosed with lymphoma, and she came to live with us. So I was juggling two terminal cancer patients at the same time. And I was lucky I had the space for her, made her comfortable. And for me, it was a wonderful experience. And I learned to discuss death and dying. it became relatively easy for me. Not so much for those people around me, but the people under my roof, it was, which was really important.
Yeah, you know, my mom lives with me. She's 86, and we have a blast. I love having her with me, and this is a gift to me that she's been able to come and live with me. And I think, why didn't we do this sooner? Why did we wait for a brain injury? You know, but people don't know what to say. We laugh about it. We talk about it. We've planned our funerals. We have it all written out. We have the end of life papers all written out, and it's fun to talk about things like that. Yeah. But other people don't feel the same.
I can just hear some of my listeners saying, you know, they can tell that you have such a positive attitude, and some of them don't, you know. And so I'm sure you could have said a bunch of negative things about your situation and your mother and this and that if you really wanted to. And, you know, the things that are just, you know, like the restroom incident, but instead you're laughing about it, you know. And a lot of people, that's just stress, building. And they're just overwhelmed of it. And, you know, you just have to let it go and you have to just laugh. And my wife and I make so many jokes that some people around us who happen to overhear, you know, our humor, are shocked. They say, oh, did he just say that? You know, oh, she's handicapped. No, but, you know, we're bantering back and forth, and we're like a comedy team, you know. And that's how we survive. I mean, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You don't mean to offend people around us, but I think survival is more important than what people think of whether we're doing it right or whether we're not doing it right, and so on. So,
and I'm sure secretly, or if not openly, they admire you being able to just enjoy parts of this season of life.
Everybody does mention that they don't know how I do what I do. David, you're a saint. You've got crowns in heaven, and da-da-da-da-da. And I says, you know, I don't feel saintly. I don't feel like I'm doing all this wonderful stuff. I'm just taking care of the new normal, you know.
Right.
Normal is normal, the old normal, the new normal, the, you know. You just do what you have to do, and you don't think about it. And I don't even think of my life as, you know, being a special case, taking care of a handicapped person or whatever, you know. I don't need any special praise. I'm just doing, everyone's going through something, everyone, you know. Mm-hmm. And if you want to feel better about what you're doing, just find somebody who's in worse shape than you, and that's a great motivator. Wow, thank you that it's not worse than it is, because it can be worse. It can be a lot worse.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, for my dad, he's very isolated with it. He can't read, he can't watch TV, he can't speak to other people. Oh. But he still has a great attitude. He'll laugh and he'll say, oh well.
Well, so thank you so much, mom. Eric and Kay, for coming on the show, and Adrian again, and again, we're here every Tuesday at noon Pacific time. And our website is caregiver.com, and all these shows are on our website. If you miss them, they're recorded, and this was a great show. So thank you again for coming on the show, and we appreciate it, and we'll be in contact.
Okay, it sounds like you two have some good stories for us.
Well, yes, we can get you some good stories. Okay. I've got over 110 interviews I've done since I've started this, and every one of them are amazing stories. And, you know, you have access to them. Feel free to check them out.
Okay, we will. Well,
thank you again, and goodbye. We'll see you next week.
Okay, thanks, Doug. Bye.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific time and anytime afterwards on podcast to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.